from Hollywood, it's rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Good evening, good evening. Welcome to Rated LGBT Radio. And I am your host, Rob Watson. Tonight, we are talking about an issue that we have had several broadcasts about. This one is a little bit different in that the broadcasts before were more theoretical, more anticipatory, and tonight we are talking about Donald Trump's transgender ban in the military that appears to be on the brink of becoming a reality. And not only is it becoming a reality, it is worse and goes further than we had been led to believe that it probably would when and if it was implemented. So we're going to go into details on that. And to talk about it in our discussion is an esteemed guest. He was in attendance of Donald Trump's State of the Union. He is a distinguished soldier and hero in my book, Lieutenant Commander Blake Dremen. And Lieutenant Commander Dremen is an active duty service member who just happens to also be transgender. And so he is going to be affected by this ban directly. He is very prominent. He has been deployed 11 times over the water, under the water, and to Afghanistan. He is also president of SPARTA, a transgender military advocacy group. Of course, as I mentioned, he was one of five service members to testify to Congress on an open transgender service, and he himself attended the State of the Union given by Donald Trump. And tonight, we have him. So we're very blessed and lucky to have that conversation, and we will do so in just a minute. Before that, I want to bring on my wonderful co-host, Brody Levesque, the top-notch journalist, who is going to give us some other insights of the things that have been happening this week, including, and we haven't heard much about this, so this may be exclusive news to many of our listeners, but in the college admissions scandal, which has a lot of wealthy people, including two well-known actresses, it has also landed a prominent LGBTQ educator in trouble, one at, I believe it's USC, who on the college side has been indicted for potentially taking a bribe as part of this whole thing. And with that, I will bring on Brody Levesque. Brody?
Good evening, Rob. Yeah, let's start the broadcast off. The University of Southern California's Senior Associate Athletic Director, Dr. Donna Heinel, was fired by USC after federal prosecutors in Boston charged her in an indictment, which was unsealed on Tuesday in U.S. District Court. And this was a part of the sweeping admissions scandal, which has affected about six or seven of the nation's more elite universities and colleges. Dr. Heinel, along with USC's head men and women's water polo coach, Jonathan Vevick, were terminated for allegedly receiving bribes, which prosecutors say totaled more than $1.3 million for her and $250,000 for him. The indictment stated that both received the monies in an effort to assist wealthy parents of taking advantage of relaxed admission standards for athletics, although their children were not legitimately being recruited as USC Trojan athletes. Heinelman, 57, is a Philadelphia native. She's a prominent member of the LGBTQ collegiate athletics community, which very much includes a role with the NCAA. in efforts to be more LGBTQ inclusive. She and her wife live in Los Angeles, and they're raising two children. So that was part of the greater context of the over 50 indictments that were handed down on Tuesday. That, of course, has been the talk of, you know, the buzz ever since then in terms of, you know, fairness and the wealthy and the rich versus, you know, everyday folk and that sort of thing. And then today, what I found kind of amusing, U.S. Vice President Mike Pence hosted a breakfast with Ireland's Taoiseach, which is basically their president, prime minister, who brought along his boyfriend, which I thought was kind of funny. Dr. Matt Barrett and the Irish leader met for breakfast at Number One Observatory Circle in Washington, which is the official residence of the Vice President of the United States. I would have paid serious money to have been a fly in that room. But so that
actually,
happened earlier today.
Yeah, Brody, I wanted to ask you about that because that was kind of a little bit of a disconcerting photo op, given what we're talking about tonight and the whole transgender ban being announced. And as you and I have talked about on numerous occasions, we have really tracked that back to none other than Mike Pence as being a primary instigator of it. Do you think this was orchestrated as a not really damage control, but to kind of muddy the waters to appear more LGBTQ friendly while he is basically pulling the rug and stabbing us in the back on the other side?
Well, as a cynical political reporter, as you know, the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, announced an effort which had been initiated by the United States ambassador to Germany, who's openly gay, regarding the criminalization of LGBTQ people globally, and that the Trump administration was going to push an initiative to kind of, you know, push countries to not do that, which is, of course, the height of hypocrisy given our guest tonight and what the commander has had to go through along with his fellow trans service members. But I think that the other part of it also is that this has been more or less the face of this administration. It's extremely, you know, hypocritical and has been since the election. It's one of those scenarios when this piece actually crossed my desk this morning, and it was duly reported by the European press, and then I picked it up on a feed from Ben Cohen's paper, Pink News UK. And I was like, yeah, okay, that makes sense, that you're going to smile and be all, you know, Mr. Nice, Polite, Political, and the whole time you're giving, you know, the Irish leader's boyfriend, a cardiologist no less, the side eye and sticking to your cell force. So it really, to me, it illustrates the greater hypocrisy of not only just the Republicans, but the Pentecostal and evangelical Christian movement in the United States, which has morphed into this seriously ugly, nasty thing. And this is what it is. If someone comes up to me these days and, you know, tells me stories about things like this, I'm not terribly surprised. You know, my reporters are saying, but this, that, and the other thing. I'm like, yeah, this is them. This is literally them. They talk out of both sides of their mouth, and they're okay with a guy signing their so-called holy book after tornadoes and blah, blah, blah. So it's just another example of the reality show atmosphere that is the White House.
Right. No, I hear you, and I totally agree on the hypocrisy. I guess where I was going with that is there method to their madness? Because, you know, it's Trump has tried to say that he is pro-LGBT while he does these things that are the most un-LGBT possible thing. There seems to be method to it where it gives him some sort of PR cover Did you think it's just cluelessness?
I mean, I don't think so, honestly, because while the, you know, state television network, also known as Fox News or the propaganda ministry, you know, may paint that picture that way, or, you know, Herb Goebbels, also known as Sarah Sanders, the White House press secretary, may decide to paint that picture. I think that, you know, pretty much anybody except for Trump's support base of 30% have pretty much figured out that, you know, they lie and they're hypocritical. And, you know, Rob, the leaders in the European Union, in the NATO countries, ranging from my prime minister in Ottawa to, you know, Theresa May in the United Kingdom to Macron of France to Merkel of Germany to just pick a leader of a country, and nobody's fooled by it anymore. And I am fairly certain, okay, that the Irish leader, you know, probably got him to his limousine, and as they were departing, you know, one observatory circle, he and his boyfriend were probably laughing themselves silly with the hypocrisy. There's absolutely no way, you know, that anybody can take this seriously anymore. No, I mean, it's gotten so
right.
bad that even those of us in the press aren't taking it seriously. You know, it's just not.
Yeah, no.
I did want to call out a couple of other things, though, before we get to Commander Drennan.
Sure.
There's a couple of bills going on right now that are big, big, huge concern. One in Tennessee and another one in Florida. In Florida, House Bill 3, and this was written by journalist Nico Lang, who is an excellent journalist. He's a freelancer right now, and he put this up at Logo Television's New Next Now. But in Nico's piece, if this bill, House Bill 3, passes, approximately 598,000 LGBTQ people in the state of Florida will lose their employment and housing protections literally overnight. And unfortunately, it's now starting to pass its way through the state lower house. It's moved quickly. It was approved. Now it's in the Senate. And now the Affairs Committee is taking a look at it. You know, this is going to be very problematic. Now, while this is going on up in Tennessee, that legislature is looking at yet another bill, which pretty much mirrors the North Carolina bill that kicked off the anti-trans and anti-LGBTQ movement, you know, as far as the Republicans are concerned. It looks like that bill may also run the course and get passed as well. So we do have a couple of pieces of legislation that we do need to pay attention to. Now, there was a bright spot to the news today, and I'm going to have to basically give props to the British monarchy. A transgender student has received the top award possible from the Prince's Trust, personally from none other than the Prince of Wales himself, Prince Charles. The heir to the British throne presented the award to the 21-year-old on behalf of his charity, the Prince's Trust, on Wednesday. The nursing student was recognized as an educational achiever of the year 2019 at the Prince's Trust Awards after opening up about how he struggled with his mental health after transitioning from female to male. So, you know, we've got some hope. But with that, I'm going to kind of toss it back to you, and we can get to the commander and talk about something just really, really bad.
We will. So, yeah, really, really bad, really horrible, and affecting our guests directly. With that, it is my honor to welcome to our show Lieutenant Commander Blake Demon. Blake, which you gave me permission to call you that instead of your title, which as a son of a military man, I'm actually more inclined to want to call you Lieutenant Commander. So but I will try to adjust. Blake, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So, Blake, tell us the details of the directive that is coming out of the Secretary of Defense, and what was your reaction when you heard the specifics of it?
So there are some very important points. The DTM contains an exemption clause for anyone who gets a diagnosis of gender dysphoria or gender identity disorder. It's a bit antiquated, but that's the ICD code that's in most military systems. Entered into their military record prior to the 12th of April. That exemption means that they are going to follow all things under the 2016 policy, which means they'll be able to access medical care, re-enlist, get their gender marker changed, file for exceptions to policy in accordance with their services. And the one surprise was for our enlisted service members to have a path to apply for commissioning programs. That was something that we didn't know was going to be included and were worried about with regards to what the recommendations were under the Mattis original memo. The other thing that it does is that anyone that did not get a diagnosis by 12 April will not fall under the exemption. Now we're going to get into some new ones, and what that means is that they cannot transition. So they can identify as transgender publicly.
We are having trouble hearing you, Blake. I'm not sure if you cut out.
I think we lost him. Yeah, now we can. Commander, I might suggest if you're coming into the computer, you may want to just call back on that number I gave you, because sometimes the computers will cut out based on what the internet signal is. So there's just a little
quirk of
software.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep my browser open because it's on my phone. So once it goes into sleep mode, I seem to cut out. So where did I leave off? What was the last thing you guys?
You left off at the commissioning of that people who they could identify, but they could not actually transition.
Okay, so they can identify as transgender as long as they say that they will continue to serve in their birth gender or not transition. They can get a diagnosis, but then we'll have to agree, and the doctor will have to agree, that's nuance, that the service member does not need to transition and can continue to serve in their birth gender.
What about individuals who have transitioned, who are essentially the gender that they feel that they should be, are they allowed to serve as their real gender?
So as long as they are already in service or have signed a contract as they're coming into service, yes, they will be allowed to continue to serve. Now, if someone is trying to join or they have not signed a contract, if they're in, say, ROTC or one of the academies, then they will be considered medically disqualified. Now, the policy states that any and all threats are waiverable, but there is no precedent for the DOD to have waived to waive gender dysphoria or transition.
Commander, if I may, let me take you back to how this whole thing got started. We had two kids in the service academies, one at the United States Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, and then we had a kid at the United States Military Academy at West Point. Now, the previous Secretary of Defense, Ashton Carter, had already laid out the groundwork, and there was a need to finish up what was known as the accessions policy, which would have allowed not only the two kids at the service academies, and this was back in 2017, to graduate and be fully commissioned, but also anyone coming into one of the MEP centers for an enlistment contract or a ROTC or what have you. Now, obviously, since that time, that's kind of moved away from that. So what I'm wondering is, if we've got kids in the academies now, okay,
yep.
This basically acts as a don't ask, don't tell, does it not, Commander?
It does, and we do have several that because of the under the accessions policy, they had to be stable for 18 months, right? Which they could do at the academies and still commission or get a waiver. Now, I do have like one kid that was in there last year, and they kept going, "Can I come out? Can I come out? Can I come out?" I said, "No, you can't come out if you want to graduate, because
right.
you'll be medically disqualified,
okay.
right? Because they have to have been done transitioning in order to commission." Now, here we have a situation where someone like the one from the U.S. Military Academy would have been able to commission under this policy because they've already signed a contract and would have been able to do what they needed to do. But under this policy now, she could still have got commissioned because she hadn't started anything regarding transition. She simply had a diagnosis of gender dysphoria and had been stable in her gender assigned at birth for the last 36 months, she
mm-hmm.
would have been able to get a waiver. So it does it does all kind, but she have had to have served in her gender assigned at birth. That's the big thing, is that yes, you can identify as transgender, you can probably get gender dysphoria waived as long as you haven't done anything with your gender dysphoria diagnosis and you've been stable for the last 36 months, but you're going to have to serve in your birth gender, which does, again, send a message of kind of this don't ask, don't tell. It's actually worse than don't ask, don't tell, because now we're saying, well, yeah, sure, you can identify, but you can't take any steps towards living in your as your authentic self, because for most of the services, the whole idea, and it really goes against anyone who is on the feminine side of the spectrum, cross-dressing is still an article under the UCMJ.
Correct.
And it is still one that I have had service members threatened with if they were trying to do their off-duty part-time RLE because somebody saw some photo on Facebook of them as their true selves. And if you don't think that somebody's going to try and continue that under this policy, especially when some of the services require you to maintain grooming and uniform standards, whether you're on leave or off duty, because there's no such thing really as off duty in the military, we'd be naive to think that nobody's going to try and bring that up or at least threaten it.
Right.
I agree.
Blake,
I think a couple of cases that we had, Commander, involved the Air Force, and we saw incidences of that take place already, so that it becomes very problematic. And I guess my follow-up question to you then would be, if that's the case, sir, okay, that means that there would be zero retention of transmilitary personnel, because at some point, Commander, they're just going to throw their hands up in the air and go, why am I even bothering? Is that not true, sir?
So that is a possibility. However, that is not what I encourage my service members to do. And part of that is we can't change the military outside of it. The military is a very insular organization. They don't like people inside of it, outside of it, telling them what to do. So if we expect to be able to change policy, I need every transgender service member who falls under the exemption policy especially to understand that they are now the face of open transgender service, and it carries with it a responsibility to help other people see value that they bring to the military. That's an unfair responsibility. It really is. But that's the reality. We can't change the military from the outside.
To that point, the insular nature of the military, what is the feeling that you're detecting within the military up through the top brass who have had much of this dictated to them against their will?
I mean, it wasn't a really popular policy change at the top. How do you detect them reacting to this?
I think they are trying to do what they can to follow the chief executive and what they believe to be right. So they are trying to toe the line until we get to a point where we can review it and change it again, or Congress intervenes.
And in the experience that you just described with a person who is mentally and emotionally ready to undergo physical transition and isn't allowed to and is forced to then continue identifying in the gender they don't relate to, what is that life like? I mean, you must have some sense of that yourself. What are we subjecting them to?
So here's the deal. The well, it's cruel is what it is. But it adds a level of stress that as a service member you don't need to have. And the whole thing is that here we have a treatable condition that we are now we are trying to reduce mental health issues within the military. We have a treatable condition that does not make someone permanently not deployable, at least not at the moment. And we are identifying it publicly as a condition that if they try to get treated for, which the treatment for gender dysphoria is transition, has been for the last 50 years, that will get them kicked out of the military. They will lose their livelihood. So in any sense of trying to do what's best by the service member, we are eliminating that option for them. So now we are simply exasperating the fact now a service member just simply won't seek help, and they will be forced to live in a gender they don't identify with, and that adds a very hard sacrifice that we are asking them to make. We no longer ask service members to make the choice between having children and serving in the military. We no longer, this whole idea of service before self and the idea that, you know, being a part of the military is a sacrifice. Yes, I absolutely understand service before self, but we also have to understand that it is service before self, but it is not service in spite of self.
Mm-hmm.
Take care of our service members, especially those that are in.
Well, what brings my question up, Commander, is, and this is what I'm thinking, we already know that we have extreme issues in the United States military as it is now with our veterans, in particular with post-traumatic stress syndrome. And we know that while a lot of that is, in fact, combat-related, we also are aware of the fact that some of that has been directly produced by circumstances within the very atmosphere of the military itself. Of concern, therefore, and here's my question, sir, we're looking at these transgender service members who are now no longer allowed to be authentic, okay?
Uh-huh.
Are we not fostering an environment or conditions in the petri dish, if you will, sir, that is going to lead to cases of, post-traumatic stress and other, conditions that probably wouldn't exist if they were able to be themselves and able to do their jobs? And before you answer, I have met United States Air Force Staff Sergeant Logan Ireland, and the Staff Sergeant has probably got to be one of the most impressive young men I've ever run into. I cannot imagine someone telling someone like Sergeant Logan that he can't be himself. I just can't, especially not someone who's a combat vet like he is and some of the things that he's done in service to his country. And certainly by no stretch of the imagination, and all due respect, Commander, I can't see anybody saying that to you either. So there's my question and there's my analogy. Sir, the floor is yours.
So, yeah, it's not going to be good. I don't know if we are necessarily going to create an environment that allows, that will cause a PTSD. That's not necessarily my place. However, one thing that's in the policy is that EO policies will remain in effect. So by extension, the policy is supposed to supposedly ensure that service members are not discriminated against by gender identity. So they don't necessarily have to hide themselves, but at the same time, having to not be able to transition and worry about other people finding out, again, you go back to a don't ask, don't tell type thing, right? It wasn't necessarily illegal to be homosexual as long as you didn't tell anybody, right? So here it's not illegal to be trans, but you just can't transition, which takes it out of an administrative issue and puts it into a medical one. And again, you're going to have service members who absolutely probably need to transition and they're not going to, and therefore we will end up with a worse health crisis for that member when we had a policy that could have retained them and all of that money didn't go to waste.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Blake, what, and I'm asking you a ridiculous question, I know, but what possible benefit are you being told by the military and those behind this is being sought after to achieve through this? I mean, we have, Brody and I obviously have our opinions on the nefarious intent behind it, but what are they in theory trying to do that is the least bit productive?
Well, what they're saying is they say that they are eliminating the special accommodation. The accommodation being our ability to transition and move outside of our birth gender into our true gender. So by their standard, what they're doing is making the standard the same for everyone, that all service members would serve in their gender assigned at birth. So that's what they think that they are accomplishing, is setting a standard of all people will serve in their gender assigned at birth, versus the fact that service members who do not have gender dysphoria are allowed to serve in their true gender. And again, we have a tribal condition that allows someone to move into true gender, and now they are being forced to serve differently. So semantics aside, that's what they're attempting to accomplish.
Right. And as one of the premier activists against this and standing up for transgender rights in the military, what are the advocacy groups' plan of action to fight this? What is afoot to address this and deal with it?
So, one thing I do want to clarify is I really prefer to be identified as an advocate versus an activist, only because that's what I'm doing. I'm not trying to upend the military. I'm not trying to do anything like that. I'm really trying to stay true to being the sailor that I know that I am, and advocate for my service members. But the plan of action right now is we will continue to work with members of Congress. We will continue to put service members in offices to tell their stories. We will continue to put service members in front of leaders at the Pentagon so that we can eliminate any of this idea that service members are trying to be activists. That we do, our main focus is serving our country, and we are simply trying to make sure that that remains a reality. And that's kind of where we're at right now, and that's what we have for us, is that we either have to wait until we get a new administration, or we have to wait until Congress can realize that this is a bipartisan issue, or a nonpartisan issue. It's about military readiness. You want to keep and retain the best and the brightest. And again, we have not seen any demonstrable evidence that allowing service members to transition has depleted standards or changed standards or done anything like that to deplete any kind of readiness or lethality of the military.
Commander, let me talk to you a little bit about Congress. You and several of your colleagues, at the invitation of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and some of the committee chair, have testified before the House, I believe two different separate committees. Can you give me, first of all, a little bit of what you said to the Congress, the representatives, and also, you know, give me your impression of your reception from both sides of the dais as you were facing the representatives, if you don't mind.
So we were actually received really well by both parties in Congress. Part of the reason we are putting service members in front of congressional members is so that they understand what a transgender service member looks like, acts like, so they don't have some recreated boogeyman in their head of, just like under when we were peeling Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and they thought service members are going to go run around the base in tutus, right? Making sure that they understand that we have bearing and grooming and, you know, we are well within standards and that we are trying our best to be the best service members that can be there. And that we're not afraid to say that not all trans people belong in the military. That is the number one thing that we would say, is that if they can't meet the standard, then they don't need to be there. But if they can meet the standards, then absolutely. Why are we keeping them out? We can't get enough volunteers as it is. And talking to members on both sides of the House subcommittee, I believe that we were received much more or much better than I think anyone thought we would ever be. And that is, you know, part and parcel of what putting a face to the issue is. So it was definitely well received. We all talked about, you know, our deployments and how we integrated into units and how we maintained all the standards that we were asked to maintain throughout our transitions. And the one thing I didn't get to mention was in January of 17, I was able to, I had a double vasectomy, came back after 2.5 weeks, got myself back in shape by the end of April, took a male PRT, or male physical readiness test, and then the next day went in so that, and I could have been waived. I didn't have to take that test because I had literally just had surgery, but got myself back in shape, made sure I volunteered and moved up my PRT so that I could have a hysterectomy the next day. So, and part of that was because I didn't want anybody to think that I was trying to skate on the standards.
Right.
But
I should note
that's
for our
exactly
listening
what
audience
we how we, you know, add to the readiness and lethality, because you will have very few service members that are more committed and willing to serve than the trans people that are currently serving.
Agreed. I was going to point out to our listening audience, I have met numerous trans military personnel, including the aforementioned Sergeant, Air Force Sergeant Logan Ireland. But it's been my experience that I have seen absolutely no difference in a trans service member or a non-trans service member in terms of esprit de corps, physical aptitude and ability. And in your case, Commander, my hat's off to you because you're constantly running marathons, whereas this battle journalist would probably croak and expire at the end of just 1 foot. So congratulations, sir. But let me ask you one more thing, and then I'm going to throw it back at Rob. Commander, as you know, most of the problems that we have as a community, and by that I mean the entire acronym, but also particularly with the trans community, is the conflation over sexual orientation and also gender identity. Sir, if you wouldn't mind addressing that for just a second, because I know that that has also been an issue within the military itself, and that, quite frankly, it's been an issue on Capitol Hill, if you don't mind, sir.
Well, a lot of people seem to think that transition has something to do with my sexual orientation or something to do with sex. And part of that is because everything in when we talk about LGBTQ, everybody wants to talk about genitals, whether it's who you're sleeping with or getting them changed or doing whatever. So a lot of the comments you're going to see on the article are like, I don't care what they do, you know, with, or who they sleep with, you know, I just want them to do their job. And obviously they're confused. But I mean, the military has actually been really good at making sure that, at least on the medical side, they don't typically confuse being gay or lesbian or bisexual with being transgender, thankfully. So I don't have to explain that very often.
Very good. Blake, one of the things you mentioned previously was getting, and maybe even surprisingly, some support from both sides of the aisle. Can you anecdotally tell us about interactions you had with some specific Republicans that was heartening and positively motivating for you?
Well, you saw it in the testimony with the ranking member Kelly. We had a chance to set up a meeting with three of our Army service members, Captain Stalick, Captain Peace, and Staff Sergeant King, with him about an hour or so before the meeting. Now, the thing to realize is that Ranking Member Kelly is a Brigadier General in the Mississippi National Guard. So there was a lot of commonality between the two of them, or between him and the three service members that we went to meet with him. And I don't necessarily know if we completely changed his mind to where he would necessarily vote in our favor, but he definitely had some perspective in understanding that transgender service members were not what he thought they were, and that they understand that not every trans person should be in the military, and that they understand that trans people need to meet the standards that we set. And trying to us trans folks in the military, we understand that they want us, that there are standards. There's nothing about what we want to do that necessarily violates what we believe the standards are. This whole idea that we're going to set this new standard that everyone should serve in their birth gender is a bit, again, talking kind of semantics. So, but I think because when they say the treatment for transgender, you know, transgender people is, you know, hormone replacement therapy and, you know, sometimes surgery, and they're like, well, all those surgeries are medically disqualifying. I go, yeah, the knee surgery is waivable, and so is childbirth, right? So, and there's no more trauma that we can inflict upon ourselves than women giving birth to children. So to say that, you know, transgender surgeries would be, you know, completely disqualifying and no one should be able to have them, and we can't waive that because we don't, and that's just, it just becomes ignorance, because it's like, it's not really that difficult. So
I think our Congress
members are coming to understand that we, the transgender service members are not some fictitious thing that they've made up in their heads.
Right. What can people listening who want to fight this and want to be supportive of our transgender military personnel, what can they do that would be most effective at this point?
So two things. One is to call their congressmen and call their senators and encourage their service members or encourage their members to watch the movie Transmilitary. I'm not shamelessly plugging it. It's just that is a really good thing to go see, give them context, have them watch the testimony. And then also anyone that wants to contribute monetarily, my recommendation is OutServe SLDN. They're our main partners. Part of what we want to do is put members and put service members in front of their congressional leaders, and it takes travel money to get these service members here so that they're not the ones paying to fight for themselves, right? So those are two big asks: is talk to your congress members and tell them to watch the movie and watch the testimony and really see what a transgender service member looks like, and then also donate to OutServe SLDN so that we can get trans service members into their office.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the movie that you're describing? Where is that located that people can stream it or see it?
Transmilitary on, I believe it's on iTunes and Amazon Prime, and then testimonies on C-SPAN. But the movie follows four transgender service members as we work through to changing the policy the first time around.
I've seen the film. It's a brilliant film, and I heartily endorse that. Commander, here's a question I have for you, because this has been raised time and time again. Oftentimes I've had private conversations with folks about this very issue, but you had, young trans youth out there listening, and some of whom desperately want to follow, in their, family's footsteps in terms of military service, and this more or less just kind of puts the brakes on it. What is your advice to them, sir?
So my advice to them is to keep working towards that goal. This fight is not over by any means. And they are not our future. They are already here today. And that they are our inspiration to keep fighting. So I encourage them to keep working towards that goal. Keep their hopes up. Keep their goals in place. Because as we have seen, the more trans people we've put in front of these folks, and I'm not talking in front of cameras, I'm talking in front of the actual, leaders within the military and leaders within Congress, is that we change hearts and minds. And we are not stopping this fight. It simply makes my resolve even harder, because I know that there are people behind me that are looking to serve the nation just as hard and want it just as badly, want it more than anyone else to be part of that 1% that volunteers. And we already have 75% who don't qualify. We don't need to be exempt. We don't need to be including any more in that. So let's keep those goals going, and we will continue to fight to make sure that you can reach them by time you're ready.
Wonderful. Blake, what organizations? We've already observed that, the democratically oriented organizations, and I would assume all the candidates for president on the Democratic side have either explicitly or by implication shown that they would be against this ban. What organizations are within the conservative/Republican tent that are working against the ban from within, or are there any?
So we are working with Log Cabin Republicans. They have new leadership. They are ready to fight with us, and we are working with them to make sure that we have some access to some of their members. We're also trying to work with several veteran service organizations. So we have Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans Association. We have Minority Veterans of America, the Purple Heart Association that Kristen Beck is now on the board to, all trying to show that they are against this. You had 11 total veteran service organizations that are not LGBT affiliated file amicus briefs on the DC Circuit case. So there are a lot of organizations that are willing to stand by us, and as well as the medical associations typically lean conservative, whether you're talking AMA, APA, or the other APA.
I'd like to know real quick for our listenership something on that, because there's something that you just pointed out, but you had said this earlier, and I want to say this to, you know, our listeners, outside of the folks on the right that are helping. If you want to help the efforts of the commander and his folks and the fellow service people, you can go to www.outserve-fldn.org/CONUS, C-O-N-U-S, and that'll give you a listing of OutServe chapters. You can go to their homepage there. They've got a thing about the work they're doing, how to get involved. Click on that. Or they have a donate button. So for those of you that aren't able to physically get involved and help the commander and the crew out, there's a donate button there at OutServe. Please hit donate and show them a little bit of love. Rob?
Blake, what have we not asked you? We are starting to run out our clock here. What have we not asked that we should have that people need to know about this?
I think you've hit all the high points. I think the big thing is that service members will continue to serve regardless of whether or not they're allowed to. They will continue to do their honorable service to this nation. We are simply going to continue to fight just like we were before we changed the policy. We are not trying to integrate or destroy our military. We are simply trying to make sure that service members have the ability to be their best selves and continue to contribute to the national security of our nation.
I want to first of all commend you on your personal service, both for the country and for the transgender individuals in the service itself. So across the board, thank you. Especially I want to thank you for joining us tonight. I did mention the roster of people throwing their hats in the ring on the Democratic side, going towards or with the intention of the presidency. Who there on that side has reached out and has specifically stood up the hardest or the strongest against this ban and everything that is implied by it?
Right now, that would be Senator Gillibrand. She was the main author and co-sponsor of the Senate bill to continue trans service. All of the candidates at one point or another, at least the ones that are in elected office right now, have spoken out in some way, shape, or form against the ban.
Outstanding. I just want to thank you for your service, Commander. In full transparency to our listeners, the Commander and I are Facebook friends, and we speak frequently. And again, sir, I appreciate your service very much and what you continue to do, not just for your country, of which I'm a Canadian, I'll note that, but also for what you do for your fellow trans service members. And my best wishes to you and yours. Rob?
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So, Lieutenant Commander Blake Drennan, I would like you to have the last word here tonight. Tell people what it is
they need to know most of all, and what message do you want them taking away with them?
So, open and authentic transgender service is not about kowtowing to some vocal minority in the military. It is about increasing the ability of service members to serve as their best selves. The military is not just a job. It's a lifestyle. It is everything that you breathe. And to leave a part of you on the table simply makes you handicapped. Not in a sense of like disabled, but it handicaps your ability to serve as the best that you can be. So this is a nonpartisan issue. As service members, we are afforded top-notch medical care once we are in service. And this is completely treatable and does not change standards in any way, shape, or form. A service member honors the standards of the gender that they are until they change to the gender that they need to be. And then they meet those standards. So there is no lowering of standards and no changing of standards. So please, please reach out to your members of Congress, donate to OutServe, see what we're doing, and reach out and support those trans service members as you meet them. And on a second note, you're going to have a bunch of trans service members going out this weekend to march in the Bataan Memorial Death March, as it's a 26.2-mile ruck to have some fun and to get some vacation time while, you know, beating our bodies as we would honor our service members who marched in the Bataan Death March. So cheer us on as we go, and thank you guys for having me tonight.
Thank you for being here, and yes, support our military, support our transgender military. They all are really giving the ultimate sacrifice and deserve nothing but honor, and I'm embarrassed for our country to be treating part of that population in the way that it is through this horrendous ban. I want to thank you for listening tonight. I want to thank my co-host, Brody Levesque, as always, for his expertise and everything he does. Also, don't forget to listen to Out in Santa Cruz on Saturday night, 7 p.m. Pacific Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can hear that on www.ksco.com. That, again, is Saturday night, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. As for us here at Rated LGBT Radio, we will be back again next week here on Blog Talk Radio, 7 p.m. Pacific Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and that will be next Thursday night with another exciting, important, relevant topic for your disposal. We wish you well, and again, get involved. This issue in particular deserves your voice, your activity, your heart and soul, and we thank you very much for listening tonight.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio!